You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy schedule release day. With that, welcome into a new episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose. On this Friday afternoon, we may be entering the weekend, but it's a busy time for NBA fans. That's because the entire league schedule, including the Houston Rockets, of course, released for the 2018-19 season as of this afternoon. A lot of highlights to break down. Rockets begin the season at home on October 17th. That's a Wednesday against the New Orleans Pelicans. Well, they don't lead the league, but they are close to leading the league with 38 overall nationally televised games. So to break down the themes, our initial thoughts on this, I'm joined by a good friend of mine. You know him from past episodes. He's Karthik Prasad. On Twitter, you can follow him at StanfordKP. Karthik, how's it going today, bud?
Good. Very excited to discuss the schedule with you, Ben.
Absolutely. Glad to have you back. And I'll lead with you on this one because there are a number of different directions that you could go, but I know you've been kind of pouring into this for the last 30 minutes or so. Just your initial thoughts, takeaways, what's the headline to you when you see this 82-game slate that just got released for the Rockets?
Yeah, I think the first thing that sticks out is how skewed almost the schedule is between home-heavy and then road-heavy and vice versa. So the first 25 games of the season, the Rockets will play, I think 15 if I can count right, on the road. So it's pretty road-heavy. But then the next 25 games, they have 17 at home, and that's right around the holidays. And so I think, you know, I look at that and I think that's pretty good. You know, first, you know, 50 plus games of the season, if there is going to be a road heavy portion of it, I'm glad that it's in the first part of the season where the legs are fresh and the team can really focus on getting into a rhythm. And I think then, you know, as we get into December part of the schedule, they'll have an opportunity to really settle in at home and hopefully, you know, build some good momentum there. And then I think as you tweeted just a few minutes ago, their closing part of the schedule is, I think, relatively soft as far as it can be. And so if they have to make up ground or solidify any playoff seeding, I think that'll be favorable. But you know, on first glance, you know, I think it's a pretty good schedule. Their longest road trip is right in the beginning of the season. And so that, you know, they should be relatively fresh for any challenges that come their way.
On the subject of freshness, the Rockets have 12 back-to-backs, which is tied for the fewest in the NBA. I mentioned their 38 nationally televised games, which is near the top. And there's a correlation there, and that the NBA, to please its broadcast partners, they're trying to make it where you have fewer back-to-backs leading into these nationally televised games, because that makes the teams involved less likely to pull a Popovich, because this whole thing of resting players started with when the Spurs, on almost no notice, rested their entire team a few years back when they were playing LeBron's Heat in Miami. But the interesting takeaway that one of my followers pointed out, and I think it's a really compelling case, is that it goes to the benefit of these great teams like Houston, and for that matter, of course, also the Warriors, the Celtics, anyone else you want to throw into that upper tier of the NBA. But what I mean by that is that on these nights that aren't nationally televised games, the three or four nights a week, that is, you have other teams squeezed into that because they don't want to overload the schedule. You typically don't have a lot of games on the nationally televised nights, especially for TNT, where they have the exclusives. So it's an interesting issue that league-wide, I'm not sure what the resolution is going to be. I could see some of the lesser clubs pushing back. But if you're a Rockets fan looking at it for the short term, to me, it seems like a pretty big competitive advantage that because they want teams like the Rockets that are nationally televised so much, again, 38 in all, 28 on TNT, ABC, and ESPN, all of a sudden that means you're towards the bottom of the league in back-to-backs because they want to make you fresh. And while that sucks if you're a fan of a lesser team, and maybe that's something the NBA has to work out, if you're a Rockets fan, that's a big break, is it not?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think, you know, for us, given that we have to probably face some of our toughest competitors in those primetime games, and thinking about the Warriors, for example, which I think almost all of them are on national TV, it's good to not have to worry about the schedule prior and just to focus on getting ready for that game and having your full squad ready. So, I mean, I think you're right. I think it's something that we have to take advantage of and make sure that, you know, especially on these road trips and other things, that we are pacing ourselves accordingly and then maximizing the opportunities against our toughest competition.
Yeah, the four Warriors matchups, all on TNT, ABC, or ESPN, Thursday, November 15th. That's the first one. That one's in Houston. Then January 3rd, that's a Thursday night in Oakland. Then Saturday, February 23rd, also in Oakland. And then the final, March 13th, a Wednesday night at home in Houston. So if you're talking about measuring up with the Warriors, and we'll talk more about the race for home court, which we've heard from Gerald Morey this offseason, is still something that's big for the Rockets. But to me, it's a good thing if you're the Rockets, especially when you have so many new parts that you are working into this, that the four matchups are pretty evenly split. Again, one in November, one in January, one in February, one in March. Because if it was too early in the season or too late, to me, versus a team with like the Warriors, that other than perhaps integrating Boogie Cousins is largely the same, to me, it's a little bit of a break that although you won't play the Warriors only three times, that's a break the Rockets got this past season. This year they'll play them four, but at least the matchups are split up. So when it comes to, you know, A, hopefully taking at least two of those four, if not more, so that you can make a run at the one seed, perhaps get the tiebreaker again, but also in terms of trying to see where you stack up in terms of using the Warriors as a measuring stick, what do you need to do at the deadline, via buyouts, whatever it may be, then at least you get a pretty good cross-section because those four matchups are split. That's my takeaway. Just curious if you see it the same way or what your thoughts are on those four matchups.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely see it the same way. The other thing is because it's four, right, and the probability of a 2-2 split is relatively high, then, you know, if you are thinking that the Rockets will be in contention for the one seed again or at least trying to be, then the other things like conference record and the other tiebreakers that can also come into play, whereas last year they won it based on the head-to-head matchup. And so what was interesting to me was just the first, you know, six games of our season are all against West playoff teams, and or, you know, relatively speaking. And so I think it's going to be interesting to see early on. I think we'll get a good barometer between those first six West matchups and then the five-game road trip as to where the Rockets stand. And so if we're looking for like an early litmus test for how this team is coming together, I think the first 3 weeks of the season or so will be really eye-opening for us. And then you can put that in the backdrop of how they want to measure up against the Warriors.
Yeah, the Rockets got a bit of a break, I would say, in terms of who they play only three times. Again, you play most of the teams in your conference four times, and you play everyone in the East twice, one at home, one away. But to fit 82 games, there's always going to be four teams that you only play three times in your conference. Last year, one of those teams was the Warriors, which was a bit of a break, especially because the Rockets won two of the three, giving them a tiebreaker. This year, the Rockets do play the Warriors four times, as you mentioned, but the four teams that they only play three times in the West, Minnesota, Portland, the Clippers, and the Suns, three of those four teams had winning records. So while none of them are juggernauts the same way that the Warriors were, although you could see the Timberwolves, if they're healthy, make a little bit of an upward move, but at least you have three of the four as winning teams as opposed to, you know, getting the short end of the stick and having, you know, three of the four being teams like, you know, Dallas or, you know, Dallas, Phoenix, teams at the bottom of the Western Conference like that.
Yeah, and that's a good point. The other thing I was looking at just now as I get deeper into the schedule is just the sanity, so to speak, of the road trips. So that first one, you know, the five-game road trip at Brooklyn, at Chicago, at Indy, at Oklahoma City, and at San Antonio, like distance-wise and schedule-wise, so they start off with a back-to-back, but then they have two, you know, 3 days off before that Oklahoma City national televised game. I think these road trips now feel a little more sane in terms of the travel. I remember in years past, even last year, the Rockets were flying all over the place, some even on back-to-backs to kind of make their next opponent. So I think that's been a point of emphasis, you know, league-wide, but certainly will help us, especially early on in the season.
Karthik, I want to turn back to the start of the year. You mentioned those first six games, all against winning teams, home against the Pelicans on Wednesday the 17th to start off, then a back-to-back at L.A., Well, at the Lakers and at the Clippers, both in LA. So as far as your back-to-backs go, that's one of them where you don't even have travel in between the games. So you can almost take that number down from 12 to 11. But then you have a three-game homestand to wrap up October of the Jazz, the Clippers, the Blazers, and then you have that five-game road trip. Now, of the five-game road trip, some of the teams are not especially good. Clearly, Brooklyn, Chicago, Indiana, and San Antonio are kind of blah. Oklahoma City is the only team that I would say you say 100% is a playoff team of that five-game road trip. Nonetheless, the first 11 games, six against winning teams in the West to start off. You have four of them at home, but it's good opponents. And then a five-game road trip where no matter who you play, some of those games can get pretty tricky. And like Brooklyn and Chicago, those are the two easiest, but that happens to be a back-to-back. So I don't expect Daryl Morey to do anything radical based on the schedule. But at the same time, one of the interesting things from a roster building standpoint for the Rockets, as you mentioned, if you want to go after the Warriors and get the number one seed again, which is something that Daryl Morey has cited this offseason, and I do agree that it's a pretty significant chip of the margins if you can get it, and that's something you want to do when you're going up against a historically dominant and talented team like Golden State, you need to be ready to go from day one. And one of the interesting things to watch for the Rockets moving forward is when they cash in that Ryan Anderson trade chip, when they get that next 3-and-D wing. Do they make a deal for a Kent Bazemore, a James Johnson, Tyler Johnson type before the season, or do they wait until closer to the deadline? Do they wait until the buyout market? We know the Rockets are going to bring in another wing. They lost Ariza and Bamute. They've only brought in James Ennis as far as proven 3-and-D type wings. I think we can agree at some time before the February trade deadline, or at the latest before the end of February, the buyout deadline, the Rockets are going to bring in one more piece. But there's an interesting dynamic of, and of course, you know, for Daryl, part of the calculus is when can he get the best deal in a trade, what optimizes Ryan's value, blah, blah, blah. But with the start of the schedule, I wouldn't say hellacious, but at least relatively challenging. To me, it might be a small nudge on the side of being ready to go from day one, because if you're trying to catch the Warriors, to overcome a team like that over 82 games again, and all with a relatively, I don't know, front-loaded might be too strong of a word, but at least challenging out of the gate. I don't know, to me, while it's not going to dictate the decision, it's nothing drastic like that, at the same time, I could see it giving a little bit more urgency towards help from day one. And of course, from there, you could also integrate them in training camp. That's kind of my just thinking out loud take on a schedule that seems slightly front-loaded. We mentioned the easy close. Do you see where I'm coming from on that? Do you have a different perspective? What's your thoughts on that angle?
Yeah, I would actually reinforce it because there's several examples that came to mind as you were talking about it. So last year we picked up Joe Johnson and Brandon Wright at the buyout deadline. Neither were major contributors down the stretch. Neither really got a chance, whether by an injury or otherwise, to really, you know, get acclimated to the rotation. Year prior, Lou Williams, he had some flashes, but never fully kind of lived up to what we thought we were getting, and that was a trade deadline acquisition. And then you can look back to even Carmelo Anthony on the Thunder last year, and how rushed that was, and how he never found his footing there either, and that was right before the season. And this is something that James Harden's talked about, but the longer that this team, especially having the aspirations that they do to play at the level they want to play at, chemistry matters. Reps matter. And I think that, you know, it'll be a balance, so to speak, to your point around what kind of return you can get. But certainly based on our own experience and watching other teams, I mean, there is a proven benefit to having guys in the locker room as early as possible, building the chemistry, figuring out their roles, having the coaching staff be able to coach them up, and then also mix and match rotations to figure out what works. And so, you know, I'm of the mind that they'll get it done before the season starts. But I mean, you know, it's always a balance. But I mean, given the schedule, you know, I'd hope that they would see the benefit of having folks in earlier rather than later.
Yeah, the one asterisk I think we could throw on that is if the 3-and-D wing is Trevor Ariza. One of the funny things, I pointed out that the Suns' first visit, that's of course Ariza's first visit back to Houston, and of course he'll get the tribute video as he deserves. Very good player for a lot of years here. But that first visit is March 15th. it's entirely possible that he's bought out by then. So that could actually be a Trevor Ariza home game against the Suns, but that's thinking very optimistically. A lot of steps to go to get to that point. By and large, I'm with you because you make a great parallel with Lou Williams. That's a guy who clearly has a lot left in the tank. I think a lot of Rockets fans just chalk up the Joe Johnson and Brandon Wright to, well, with Wright being injured, with Joe Johnson just being old. But some of it is that even if a guy like Lou Williams is in his prime, it's just difficult to join midway through, or now with the NBA schedule starting earlier than ever, now it starts mid-October because that's how they're avoiding as many back-to-backs as they used to have. They're spacing out the schedule a little bit more. And so if you join at the deadline or after in the case of buyouts, then that can make it really difficult when basically two-thirds or more of the schedule is already gone. The flip side to that, and I guess it's just kind of like a glass half empty, glass half full, however you want to look at it, but the close to the schedule, as you referenced earlier, it's fairly soft. Now, they do have a tough finale at Oklahoma City to end the season, although the finales are always really weird. I essentially consider the last day of the NBA season to be a crapshoot because so many teams, even if they're good, will be locked into a seed, and then if they are, with the playoffs looming just 3 days away, they're largely going to be resting their players, or if they do play, putting them in bubble wrap and not really trying anything. But before that, they have a pretty soft closing stretch of home against the Nuggets and Kings, on the road against the Kings and Clippers, and then home against the Knicks and Suns. So everything we said is true. I do think there's a lot of urgency to get a guy here sooner rather than later in terms of that second 3-and-D wing. But I guess the other thing that Daryl kind of has in his back pocket, so to speak, is if they do need to make up ground late, there's an ability to do that because of the soft close. So to me, I guess it comes back to the theme I keep going back to with this schedule is it is balanced. You can look at it both ways, but in the end, it seems like the Rockets, and maybe it just is a natural product having so many nationally televised games, it gives them options on both ends. So while there are pros and cons to each, to me, balance is the word that I keep coming back to. So at least you can make up some of that on the back end if for some reason you do have to wait until during the season to make that move, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing is, and you know, one thing we got the benefit of last year that we probably won't this year in terms of the schedule and just general competitiveness is the strength of our division. I imagine that, you know, Dallas, I mean, I don't expect them to make the playoffs, but they will be more competitive. San Antonio will still be competitive now with the DeRozan trade. And then Memphis, I think if they're healthy, will actually be able to compete too. And so I look at those because that's, again, 16, that's one-fifth of our schedule and with games peppered throughout the season. And so, you know, you talk about balance, and I think that, you know, the Rockets will be able to kind of mix and match or press forward if they need to. But I'm also just now thinking about, you know, how does the division play into this? And if there's anything that will change from last season. And to me, it's just the level of competitiveness and some of these games that they won pretty easily last year, they'll have to kind of save some extra gas for.
As we close this out, I want to take things slightly less analytical, less X's and O's, and talk a little more broadly. One interesting thing I know the Rockets have been looking at the last few years is the issue of start times, because clearly Toyota Center can be a very intimidating environment like it was in the Western Conference Finals when the stakes are high. Unfortunately, in the regular season and even the first couple of rounds of the playoffs, many times it's not. Everyone notices the empty seats, and sometimes that issue is overplayed because, especially in recent playoff years, the Rockets have had a lot of series against very small market teams like Oklahoma City, like Utah, like Minnesota, where just the corporate lifestyle, the traffic, nowhere near as extreme as it is in Houston. So in terms of butts in the seats at tip-off, it's a little bit of an apples to oranges comparison. Nonetheless, I think we can all agree that regardless of the fact that Houston as an enormous city with all sorts of corporate money coming in, and of course that helps pay the luxury taxes it's going to take to keep this great team together. At the same time, we can all agree that regardless of if those are viable reasons, it still benefits the Rockets if they have a better home court advantage. And the Rockets have been looking at this start time issue for a few years. I've had Tad Brown on this show before asking him about it. And of course they have task groups, they have panels of their season ticket holders they ask, but in general what he's told me is they have looked at the data and they don't really see a big difference in terms of 7 versus 7:30. Most teams in the league start at 7 p.m. local time. That's what the Rockets have been doing for the last 10-plus years. At one point back in the summit, the earlier days, it was 7:30. It's been 7 for 10 years or so now. They considered shifting to 7:30, pushing it back, but they said the data did not. They launched a real investigation of this last summer when Tillman was first taking over. Not sure if they really looked at the issue again, although I know they consider it every year. But regardless, it's now 7. It's confirmed. That's the standard start time, with a few exceptions being nationally televised games. Occasionally, there's a Sunday discrepancy, that sort of thing. But my take on it, I'm just curious your thoughts on this issue, because to me, I almost see it as a plus moving forward. I could see more sports teams moving their times up. And what I mean by that is the Cleveland Indians in baseball have been experimenting more with 6 p.m. local time starts. Now, I don't think that the Rockets or the NBA is going to go that early anytime soon. But in terms of rising populations, especially in major urban centers like this, traffic considerations, the idea that someone working downtown is going to be able to go home, change, pick up the family, and get back, I don't know about you, but for me, driving around Houston, that does not really happen. To me, it's more viable. I think what the Rockets are trying to play into, especially with downtown building up, you can actually get folks more involved if you keep the start times at 7 and then you integrate it with the normal workday, where you hope people, especially as that downtown area near Toyota Center, near Minute Maid Park, continues to build, continues to thrive, to where hopefully folks stay down there, and then for various reasons you give more incentives, like the $5 beer promos are a pretty good idea in the playoffs. That clearly helps some. But to me, if anything, I think you might see movements towards starting a little bit earlier. I just don't see, especially in a city like Houston, moving back really being that advantageous on any level, because what you hear about in terms of, you know, folks going home and getting back, in a city like Houston, I just don't think that's really going to fix the issue. And according to Tad Brown, the data also shows that that's not really a big deal. So your thoughts on 7 versus 7:30, the issue is start times, Rockets sticking with 7 p.m., that a good move in your opinion, or where do you weigh in?
Yeah, I agree. And I, you know, as someone who does work downtown, who's had to, you know, go to the games as whether it's work events or otherwise, I mean, it's actually pretty convenient if it's right after work. I'm in that camp, the pro 7 p.m. camp. I really liked what the Rockets did last year with some of the happy hour type of offerings, and I think they'll probably double down on that. And I think in general, the more investments they make in the experience of being at Toyota Center, which they are, I mean, it's top of mind for them from everything I've heard, I think that'll solve the issue of itself. So, you know, 7 p.m. starts to me are a good natural balance, especially for the central time zone. And I think it's a great move.
Yeah, I like what the Indians are doing. I don't want any team to do it that regularly. It would be incredibly bold to push things back a full hour on a regular basis, but on occasion throwing in something like that, I agree, it plays to the work crowd, and as cities like Houston continue to grow, I think you could see it adopted by more and more teams. I think it's an interesting move, and I hope it works out. And if anything, I think the Rockets might experiment with that on a very smaller case-by-case basis rather than moving back. I just don't see much of an advantage for 7:30, especially because then I think I'll let you get back in terms of the working crowd if you have a 7:30 start, that type of thing, and then traffic leaving downtown. So
yeah, and one last thought there, Ben, because there's a home-heavy portion of this schedule that I referenced earlier that's right around the holidays, and I think they have like 15 or so from like December 11th through the early part of the new year. And that's going to help attendance, too, in terms of people actually have a chance to bring their families to the games, to get there on time, to really enjoy and plan for those games. And that was something we didn't really have last year. And so I'm looking forward to that, especially with the hype already around the team as an established we have, you know, high expectations. I think we'll be pleasantly surprised in how the turnout is this year. But just one last thought there.
Yeah, you've got a lot of games around the holidays. You've got, obviously, the Christmas showdown with the Thunder, the 22nd against the Spurs, which is always a big rivalry, 27th against Boston, which may well be the second or third best team in the league. You've got your traditional New Year's Eve game against Memphis, which hopefully should be a layup. I'm not going to assume anything, because, of course, New Year's Eve last year, we thought it would be a layup against the Lakers. Ended up going to double overtime, and in large part because of the hole they had to dig out of to win. That was the game that Harden strained his hamstring and ended up missing the next 7 games. By the way, speaking of the Lakers, Rockets got them 4 times, but the first Laker game, looking that up, I know they're all nationally televised, well, in LA on the second game of the year, October 20th, the two in Houston, Thursday the 13th. That's LeBron's first appearance with the Lakers. And then Saturday, the 19th, that's the start of the ABC primetime schedule, 19th of January. That's when the Lakers are in Houston. So a lot of opportunities as far as big games on the schedule, not just the two with the Warriors, but two with the Lakers as well. And so those should definitely be a big stimulus for the home crowd, along with, of course, the holiday games, especially Christmas against the Thunder, which should be absolutely thrilling, especially with the Harden and Carmelo angles against their whole team. Karthik, last issue I want to get into. Take a stab at the overall record. I'll start because if people follow us on Twitter, me at Ben DuBose, you at Stanford KP, they probably saw us on Sunday going back and forth with Matt Moore at HP Basketball about the over-under Rockets projected, in my opinion, a comically low 54.5 for a team that won 65 games a year ago. I think between the strength of the West, the Rockets working in some new pieces, you could argue that they win a few less games, but to argue 10-plus to me is rather extreme when you factor in basically a team that loses Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute and right now replaces them with Carmelo Anthony, James Ennis, and then filler at the end of the bench such as Michael Carter-Williams, maybe De'Anthony Melton takes a step in his rookie year, et cetera, et cetera. To me, a more fair over-under, and I would still say over, would be maybe 58.5, to where you have a 5 or 6 game fall-off because obviously the chemistry was great last year. The Rockets didn't have good injury luck. Bill Simmons referenced that in a recent podcast, and he could not be more wrong on that because clearly Chris Paul missed 24 games, most of any season this entire decade. Harden had the first major injury of his time in Houston. Bamute missed 20-plus games. Ariza missed nearly 15, although, by the way, the Rockets were 14-1, the 15 that Ariza missed, for everyone that keeps throwing out that absence. That said, I can understand that last year was a special year in terms of the chemistry. It's not easy to just, even if you brought back the same team and ignored the aging curve, to win 65 games again. But to me, 10-plus games is a little much of a fall-off. That, to me, seems very narrative-driven. So for me, I'll go with 60-22, but I would say that 58.5 feels like a more fair over-under. Your thoughts, and I guess it's now a little bit easier to project, part of why I waited until now to get you in the podcast, now that we actually have the schedule out, in terms of an early guess at the record.
Yeah, my over-under as of when we were having the back-and-forth with Matt Moore was around 58, I think. But, you know, looking at the schedule, I just don't see that many schedule losses. The back-to-backs are pretty favorable. The travel's pretty good. The balance is pretty good. I mean, I still have them over 60 wins. I'm probably closer to 62-20, okay, just because I think they'll make the other move earlier rather than later in terms of adding a 3-and-D wing. I think they'll come out motivated. They know their goals. They know their capabilities. And so, yeah, I don't see much of a drop-off, if at all. The West is more competitive, so I think that costs them a couple games. But other than that, like, I think this team is going to be really hungry. And there's nothing that's standing in the way other than any potential injury. And knock on wood, if we don't deal with that, I think we'll have a really, really great season again.
Sounds good. Karthik, thanks so much for the time, buddy. Folks, again, Karthik Prasad, if you're not already following him on Twitter, please do, @StanfordKP. Karthik, have a good weekend. Thanks for joining us here at Locked On Rockets.
Thanks, Ben. Have a great weekend, and always a pleasure to join the podcast.
Absolutely. That was Karthik Prasad, again, Stanford KP on Twitter. Great friend of the show, great follow for Rockets content, so if you aren't following him already, please do so. With that, we can wrap up and get on to the weekend. As always, thanks for spending a little bit of your Friday evening or whenever you're listening with us here at Locked On Rockets. Absolutely appreciate it. And if you want more content before the next show, early next week, in which hopefully we'll have the official Carmelo Anthony signing, still not pen to paper, or maybe it is, but we haven't seen the press release sent out at the very least. My guess is that will be early next week, and then we'll find out if there's a press conference or a conference call. Still waiting on that, but again, as stated in Tuesday's show, now that Carmelo's official commitment is in, Chris Paul speaking on NBA TV Friday afternoon about Carmelo's addition in Houston, yeah, it's official. It's just a matter of when the logistics line up so that Carmelo and Daryl Morey or Carmelo and any Rockets representation are in the same room to make that signing official. But until then, this will be our last show. So if you want more content before the next time, best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben DuBose. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. And if you want places beyond Twitter, go to website lockedonrockets.com, Facebook account at facebook.com/lockedonrockets, and an email address at lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Always, you can access our content, ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, anything we do to make this a better podcast for you, a diehard Rockets fan. I'd absolutely love to hear from you. Also, if you're not following us already or subscribing to us, I should say, across our various platforms, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, TuneIn, et cetera, please do. You can also subscribe to Locked On Texans. The Texans had their preseason opener last night, winning in Kansas City. There's a great show covering them, Locked On Texans, hosted by my friends Robert Land and Brian Patterson. So give them a follow and a subscription if you haven't already. And also, in addition to subscribing, if you'd be kind enough to leave us at Locked On Rockets, Locked On Texans, or Locked On whatever show you want to listen to across the NBA, NFL, and even some MLB and college sports, leave a 5-star review if you can, in addition to subscribing, because that's how we can make the business model work and look attractive to potential advertisers and keep this thing going as the most regular podcast, in my case, covering Houston Rockets basketball. So for now, I will sign off. As always, thanks to you all for listening, and we'll be talking again very soon right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast analysis of everything Houston Rockets basketball.